welcome. The show is Talking About Jazz. I'm your host, Joan Griffith, and my guest in the studio today is the fabulous guitarist and good friend of mine, David Singley. And David, welcome to
the
show.
Thanks, Joan. Hi. Yeah. Good to be here.
So we've played gigs together a long time, and we can discuss that if we wish, but why don't we just play a tune to start with? And what I've got on the stand is an original called Metamora, and what's the story with that?
Oh, well, Metamora is the name of the small town in central Illinois from which I originate. That's where I lived and grew up as a kid. It's about 15 miles outside of Peoria, right in the middle of the state, right in the middle of all those cornfields.
All right. So are we supposed to kind of channel cornfields as we listen, or not necessarily?
Yeah. It's sort of a cornfield jazz kind of thing.
Oh, that's a beautiful tune when we run through it. And if you're just tuning in, the show is Talking About Jazz. I'm your host, Joan Griffith, and my guest today is David Singley playing an original tune called Metamora.
A one, two, three.
Is a beautiful thing.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, very lovely. Now, so remind me, is this on your new album or an old album?
This is on my new CD. This is my from my new CD, which was released the end of last year.
Oh, great.
End of 2016. Mm-hmm. The CD is called Good Hope.
Cool. And tell so the CD you were talking about a little bit earlier, and you're kind of stretching out a little bit as far as is what kind of music a person might expect out of a jazz guy, right?
Right, yeah. I'm kind of stretching the boundaries, I guess you could say, and in so doing, kind of in jazz lingo, sort of doing the opposite of stretching out. I'm trying to play shorter solos, simpler solos, ideas that kind of coalesce around the melody and not necessarily just outlining the chords, but trying to stay to certain, like, motivic ideas, you know, just kind of playing melodically and simply, like that tune. You know, I've joked with people, it's been almost 20 years since I wrote this tune. I wrote it in the late 90s, and I've joked with people over the years, it's sort of like taking the Charlie Parker tune Confirmation and turning it into a folk tune. is what I tried to do.
Couldn't be a more jazz idea than that.
Right, yeah, just take all the 2/5s out, and what do you have left? Well, this is kind of what you have left, sort of.
Yeah,
except it starts on the 4 chord instead of the 1 chord.
Yeah, I know. It's a lovely thing. And as a player, I'm just looking at the, you know, the harmony is kind of familiar, but takes a lot of interesting turns, you know. And
right, and that was, when I composed this, what I had in mind was really just sort of like 3-part counterpoint between the 2 parts of the guitar part, which are notated, and then the bass part of just like the roots of these chords or the whatever I wanted on the bottom of the inversion of the triad or whatever it was. So I really envisioned this 3-part counterpoint that sometimes says a chord and other times actually only just sort of hints at a chord. It doesn't really sound major, minor. It kind of sounds like a sus chord or something like that.
Yeah.
And a lot of times country and folk music does that sort of thing. It uses triadic harmony, and then even when the notes aren't a straight-up major or minor triad, they just make some other simpler kind of like sus 2 or sus 4 kind of sound, not 7th and 9th and 11th and 13th chords like we're used to in jazz.
Yeah.
But they're still, yeah, as you say, they're very pretty, and they can do a lot of things. And, you know, I think this was actually the beginning back in the late 90s of me starting to think about music this way, and it's certainly influenced the way that I solo. That now when I solo, basically what I'm trying to do is like write a tune like this. Mm-hmm. Even if I'm soloing on, you know, like maybe I'm soloing on Confirmation. I'm trying to, rather than run 2/5s, I'm trying to like actually compose something right off the top of my head.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that all of us kind of go through evolutions of sounds that are interesting to us, you know, I really do like the sounds of sus 4s and sus 2s, and they're just, you know, maybe we have too many 9s and 13s that we've heard. We need to try something
else. Well, those
are
cool, too. I just remember as a kid, I grew up in the Catholic Church, and my parents would take me to church on Sundays, and I just remember sitting there and hearing the organ. And especially like at Christmas time, I realized that even before I started music lessons, I could sort of aurally remember the harmonizations of those old, you know, hymns. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when I became an adult and started to play the guitar and had the facility and the ears to do so, I realized I could sit at the guitar and realize those harmonizations that I heard as a kid on the organist at church. And that just fascinated me. And that's what this kind of harmony, it's sort of blending jazz and a little bit of pop and, like I said, the folk elements, and then also just the other kinds of harmony and things that we hear in things like church music.
Yeah,
even though this doesn't sound like church music at all to me, but I think it's there's some element of that in the back of my head somewhere of being, you know, 8 years old and sitting in a church pew and hearing those organ chords and thinking, wow, what are they
that
doing?
Cool.
What are the inside
of
those voicings doing? They're going up and they're going down and they're going sideways. And,
that's right. This is how
really
theory
cool.
nerds are born. I know. I feel, you know, the same way. I would go home after church and get the hymn book out and play them on the piano just because I wanted to. You know, I don't know.
Sure. What
experience
is that?
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When we hear a sound, you say, what is that? And we didn't have a piano at home, and I didn't, you know, even years later, I just, oh my God, I was always all thumbs at the piano. So I always had to figure out how to do it on the guitar, which is.
It's hard.
Well, it's way harder.
I know.
I wish now that I had started on piano when I was 10 years old instead of the guitar.
Well, that's okay. You sound right on the guitar. So
it's a little late now to
it's
change.
It's fine, yeah. Now, if you just tuned in, the show is Talking About Jazz. I'm your host, Joan Griffith. My guest today is David Singley on the guitar, and at the moment I'm playing a little bass with him. And I think we have another tune of yours up, called Waltz for Bunky. That's what
Bunky.
We had spoken of. And What's this tune? Where does it reside in your universe?
This tune, which I haven't played in years, so this will be fun. I wrote this back in the mid-90s, and, well, Bunky was the, what do you call him, pet name?
Mm-hmm.
It was the pet name I had for my first wife.
Oh,
This was her name. One day I wrote this, I think if I remember right, man, this has been a long time ago, but if I remember correctly, the beginning of this came to me as I was awakening from a nap.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sort of half asleep, half awake stage, these opening chords and then this like tonal shift of these two chords, the idea just came to me. I didn't have a guitar with me. I just heard these sounds, and then I, you know, went into my office and picked up a guitar and started just playing these first like 8 or 16 bars over and over and over again. And then at some point, you know, fleshed it out and finished it. But that's how the tune started. I put it on my first record, which is called, what's my first record called? How My Heart Sings. It came out in 1997, mm-hmm. So a whole
nice.
Whopping 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And we used to play it around town, myself and Jay Epstein on drums and Tom Lewis on bass. Had a little trio, and we would play at the Old Dakota and mm-hmm. some coffee houses and whatever around town. And this is a tune that we would play back then.
All right, well, let's see how it goes. You know, play it down and then play a chorus or two, and it'll work out. All right. Well, jazz listeners, the show is talking about jazz. I'm your host, Joan Griffith. My guest is guitarist David Singley, and we're going to play an original tune of his called Waltz for Bunky.
One, two, one, two, three, one. Thank you.
a beautiful tune, Dave.
Thanks.
Very nice. That was a tune called Waltz for Bunky. The show is talking about jazz. I'm your host, Joan Griffith. My guest is David Singley, playing a beautiful original called Waltz for Bunky. Yeah, Dave, nice. The chord structure is a little unusual. And any way that you explain coming up with that, or just different key areas, or what were you thinking?
I think, well, this is the precursor to the previous tune by about 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I was already starting to play with was chromatic voice motion,
mm-hmm,
within chords.
Yeah.
But I was still using sort of traditional jazz chords.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's sevenths and elevenths and thirteenths and altered this and altered that. But so they're really the types of sounds that we expect, but I was trying to use them in sort of non-traditional functions,
mm-hmm,
because I really wasn't thinking about function. In fact, what I was... Actually, that's not true. If I remember correctly, what I was trying to do was disguise function.
Oh,
so,
sure.
And what I mean by that for your non-musician, mm-hmm, listeners is, you know, the chord sequences that we're used to hearing, you know, if I use those same chords, but I use them sort of out of sequence,
mm-hmm,
with some other odd chords interspersed, like... which is the same chord progression, but with a few other things in it, it masks what the original function was. Then if I just pull sort of the D minor G7C out of it and just do some of the other things, but still have chromatic voice leading in the inner voices, I've got...
something different.
I've got something different.
Yeah.
The same old chords, but used in different ways. And then so then 5 years down the road, I started trying to just loosen the rules of, well, maybe I don't really even need... those chords anymore. Maybe maybe what I need is just voice motion, and that's kind of what I started to get, mm-hmm, into writing. So this was, you know, what's it say, 1994 on there? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was still using, you know, G minor 7, D minor 7, you know, B flat, 9 sharp 11, chords like that jazz players play all the time, but use them in ways that they don't normally sort of, they don't fall in this particular order. But it was, again, it was all about just looking at the guitar and thinking about the motion between the different voices, mm-hmm, of the chords rather than just their function.
Yeah, no, if anybody listens to the show much, we talk a lot about theory on here.
Okay.
Because I like it, and it makes a lot of sense to me how things are organized, so,
mm-hmm,
it's cool. Yeah.
I also was listening to a lot of Bill Evans at the time
that'll do it.
So I hope that comes through, but that was a really, really heavy influence on my playing and writing at the time.
Yeah, well, it's always good to listen to Bill Evans, I say.
There's never a bad day to listen to Bill Evans, that's for sure.
You want to try this No Goodbyes deal? Would that be the thing that we should try next, or
sure,
should we play a standard?
Yeah,
or
no, let's
like?
Play No Goodbyes. This
okay.
is sort of the... If there's a hit on my new record, this is it.
All right. So tell me a little bit about this. I'm going to change instruments here and play a little guitar with you.
Yeah. This is a song written by my good friend Craig Hara, who's a musician in town. People certainly know Craig's brother Bert, who was the former principal clarinet here at the Minnesota Orchestra, and also Craig's wife Marnie. Marnie Huffam is the English hornist at the Minnesota Orchestra. Craig is a fabulous musician, really an interesting guy. He's a classically trained trumpet player. But he also is a wonderful pianist and plays guitar and has also taught himself to play drum set. And most musicians in town, if they know him, they may know him as a working drummer. But he plays everything. And when he grew up in L.A., and he did a lot of different kinds of session work. He did, like, synthesizer programming, arranging, you name it, and did a lot of kinds of stuff. So he wrote this piece some years ago. As I recall, it was an anniversary present for his wife. And I don't remember the whole stories about how it came out, but he sort of wrote it on guitar, and he had guitar in mind. And in the late 90s and early 2000s, Craig and I played in a band together in town called Zona. It was Craig on drums, myself on guitar, Dave Milne on saxophone, and Michael O'Brien on bass. And we would do this tune live. It's really meant to be for like a string orchestra and guitar, but we would do it with synthesizer, guitar. There was a little bit of flute, calendar melody, and then the bass. And even that, back in the old days in the old Dakota and even the New Dakota in the early 2000s, we would play this, and you got to imagine this, at a crowded bar with a lot of conversation, tinkling of glasses and ringing of telephones and all that kind of stuff going on. We'd get about 30 to 45 seconds into this tune, and the whole place would stop.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I was playing a little bit earlier, and it's really beautiful.
So I knew from years ago that there was something about this tune, and I liked playing it too. The guitar carries the melody all the way through it, and it was always a joy to get to play. So I just had this idea in mind for years and years and years, and I approached Craig a few years back and said, would you mind if I wrote an orchestration of this for, like, a full orchestra? And he said, knock yourself out. I said, well, I want to do a record, and I want to do this, but I want to do it upright. So I wrote the orchestration. He and I actually kind of bounced back and forth. He kind of proofread my orchestration, made some suggestions, made some changes, and then I'd, you know, kind of make some suggestions back. So it was a kind of a cooperative deal. And then I got Becca Ahrens, a local cellist and contractor, to contract the orchestra. We had a 19-piece orchestra, and we rented Sundin Hall over at Hamline University and got the sort of remote recording crew there, and we also hired a film crew to film the whole thing. So it's hopefully at some point here, by the time this airs, the video will be out on YouTube that you can watch. And so it's a lovely tune. I just absolutely love playing it. Also, I've learned about myself over the years that this is really kind of it's an interesting commentary on myself, that I didn't write this tune, but this is kind of a collaboration. Craig wrote the tune. He and I wrote the orchestration together. Obviously, I'm playing, and I'm playing the melody. I put all of this together and, you know, paid the bills and did all that stuff. It's still his tune, though. He conducted it the day we recorded it. And I'm learning as I get older that I like collaborating.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of fun to not just do something myself, but to do something with somebody else and have it be as close as 50-50 kind of deal as possible. Mm-hmm. Because what we end up with is something so far beyond what anything my imagination would have come up with. Mm-hmm. And it surprises me in so many wonderful ways that I'm always seeking out opportunities to collaborate musically with someone else. And when I do, I always have a good time. I never regret collaborating with someone.
Oh, that's fun. You know, I think it's interesting because, you know, I know you, we cross paths as jobbers, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, playing bunches of different gigs with bunches of different people. I played with you with the Minnesota Orchestra and at Gabbert's Furniture. And, you know, and we have that existence where we meet a lot of people, but we only have an intense event with them for about maybe 2 or 3 hours. And it doesn't make for collaboration. It makes more for a lone wolf kind of situation. So it's fun to have a chance to do something a little bit bigger and with more people, I think so.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it was really interesting the day we recorded this. You know, with the film crew and the audio crew, there was probably about 40 of us there, 35 or 40. And you would not believe the looks on people's faces and the questions that I got, too. Because people are smart. They're looking around and they realize, like, so these people aren't pulling, you're not pulling favors. I'm not pulling favors. Well, how are you doing this? How am I doing this? I'm in my 50s, and I'm tired. I'm tired of just kind of living paycheck to paycheck and gig to gig and hoping I make it this year and hoping I make it next year. And I got a little money in the bank, and I'm not getting any younger. So why not? Why mm-hmm. not, like, do some musical projects that I've always wanted to do? And I've always wanted to do something like this.
Oh, yeah.
And this was the tune. I just kind of felt like if I'm ever going to do something like this, this would be the type of tune that I would want to do. And so I just did it. And it was really gratifying. I had several conversations with different people who sort of, I could tell they were walking away from me, sort of looking off in the distance thinking, wow, what would I like to do? And I thought, man, that's really cool. That is really cool. If I inspired anybody out of this, I would be really, really grateful, because I am. As I'm getting older, I'm just thinking, you know what? To heck with it. If I want to do something, I'm going to do it. And I might, you know, my checkbook might take a little bit of a hit, but hey, you can't take it with you, you know. And yeah. I'm starting to be a big believer in the idea that what's really important in life are experiences, not possessions, but experiences. And so this was a great experience, recording this and putting this all together. Man, it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience, and I can't wait to do more things like it. And, yeah. and hopefully, you know, get it out there and get people to like it and listen to it and, you know, get it so that I can afford to do this and not have to take a huge financial hit every time I do a project like this. But I'm going to do them anyway because it's just an enormous amount of fun.
Oh, true. Fun. All right, everybody, if you just tuned in, the show is talking about jazz. I'm your host, Joan Griffith. I'm going to play a little guitar with my guest in the studio today, David Singley, on a tune called No Goodbyes by Craig Hara, and collaboration orchestration of David Singley's on his new album. And I'll do my best to be your orchestra. We'll see how that goes. So, No Goodbyes. Well, super pretty.
All right. Yeah, I'd never done that tune that way.
Yeah, listeners, it's a high wire act in here. So playing a beautiful tune called No Goodbyes. I can barely wait for the video after all of that. That'll
well,
be
me
beautiful.
Too. Yeah, yeah, me too. It's been a long road. Like I said, we recorded that in August of 2014. But, you know, it's just been, you know, when you're doing a big project like that, there's just been so many moving parts and moving pieces and, you know, a lot of people involved and people's schedules, and people are trying to do this work on the side while they're doing their, you know, their job work.
It's
taken a long time, but yeah, hopefully here, by the time this airs, it'll be out on YouTube.
Well, it's nice, I love hearing new music, and, you know, I think that's where, you know, even if it's not exactly jazz, it's still where the art, you know, develops, is with people writing new tunes.
Well, and I'm learning, somebody asked me here a while back about that tune, about where, obviously I didn't write the song, but like the orchestration, where the idea, where the sound came from in my head. And I just realized that, you know, when I was a kid, I was also just fascinated by the music in like movies. You know, when my parents would take me to a movie, and then when I got a little older and would go to movies myself, obviously as a, you know, going to be an aspiring musician, I was also always fascinated by it. So I think, you know, some of those, just, man, those great film scores of the 60s and 70s, you know, Elmer Bernstein and John Williams, and just, you know, I can't even think of all the names, but, and of course, as a kid, I didn't know who these people were. I just knew that this music was really fascinating.
Yeah.
And so that certainly inspires me. I remember several years ago, just a little thing, but gosh, it was a real career highlight. There was a show, when did I play that? About 1999. There was a show on Broadway that toured, came through town. It was called Fosse. It was sort of like a dance review instead of a musical review. So it was all of these choreographed pieces that Bob Fosse had choreographed from all these shows. And one of them, of course, I was in the pit. I couldn't see what was going on stage, but it was the music to the opening theme of Cool Hand Luke.
Oh, geez.
Remember that?
I do,
yeah. That guitar thing at Tommy Tedesco.
Yeah.
So,
Tommy Tedesco.
Yeah, man. So stuff like that, I think, influences me. And that's where stuff like this comes from inside my head, is just hearing things like that and going, oh, acoustic guitar and strings. Yeah, I want to do something like that someday.
Well, I think that sometimes we... You know, we're talking about the jobbing life, and it's got its challenges. You know, you have to, you know, at least the world that we inhabit, you have to be really versatile and willing to, you know, one day play with the orchestra and the next day play at a, you know, at a blues saloon, you know, and be able to, you know, get through lots of different kinds of styles. You know, one minute it's Bernstein, and the next minute it's Monk, and the next minute it's, you know,
Muddy Waters.
Yeah, whatever. And, you know, you can't help... have all that music seep into you, you know, and come out in varieties of ways, I think. So
sure, yeah. And it just reminds me of that old adage that there are really only two types of music, right? There are only two.
Good old Louis Armstrong.
Yeah.
There's good and there's bad.
There's the other kind, I think. And as long as you make sure that the good inhabits your world pretty much 24/7, you're going to be okay regardless. You know, as I've talked to people about this new record, and they ask me, well, what is it? I'm like, it's good music. I don't know what it is. You know, I mean, there's stuff on there that's sort of blues. There's a tune, actually, the title tune on the record, Good Hope, is sort of like a country waltz.
Cool.
Then sort of breaks into this big blues rock guitar thing and then goes back to being a country waltz again. Where did that come from? My upbringing.
Yeah.
That's what my dad listened to, you know, so it's all in there. And as long as it's good, you know, I'm not really too choosy about genre or, you know, like, I like a certain kind of a groove, or I like a groove.
I like a groove.
any kind. It doesn't really matter to me.
Right. Or the groove, whatever that is.
Yeah. Whatever it is
too
today.
Too funny. I don't know what we want to do next, but I have a tune in front of me called Gone Is Yesterday. For those of you who can't see in the studio, we have David brought a bunch of different kinds of guitars, and right now he's holding onto a nylon string Takamine, which is what I mostly play. So we have two of the same instruments.
I think we've decided it's even the same model,
right? It might even be.
Yeah, I think it is.
I'm sure yours is in better shape than mine, but.
Yeah, it's the same model. What year is yours? Do you remember when you bought it?
Oh, geez. I would say 90, something like that.
Mine's from
90, who knows?
Mine's from 92. I remember I bought mine to play the show Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat with Donny Osmond. Yeah. I needed a nylon string guitar with a pickup, and I went to Growth Music in Bloomington, where I was teaching at the time.
Yeah.
And Felix Norman set me up.
Yeah.
He said, "Oh yeah, this is the best one we've got in the store."
Yeah,
and I said, "Fine, I'll take it."
I think I got mine in Felix too.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, he steered me right, because all these years later, it's broken into being a very nice guitar, and Matt Zimmerman, my engineer, just absolutely loves it in the studio. He says, "Man, that is a beautiful sounding instrument." So I'm tickled, because, and this is a great guitar for me. I don't know how you feel, but I am not a classically trained guitar player at all. I admit that, not proudly, but freely. And this is a great guitar for me because it's got a thin neck. It's really actually more like an electric guitar than an acoustic guitar. And it allows me to, you know, get that sound. And I even play with a pick. You know, I'm not really much of a fingerstyle player. But yeah, it allows me to get that sound and get a good sound for that, and still have a guitar that kind of feels what my hands are used to. Like,
yeah.
I said, it really kind of plays more like an electric guitar than an acoustic guitar.
Yeah, for guitarists, the instrument you pick is, you know, 90% of, you know, expressing of your personality. So
sure,
it's really...
yeah. And I think it's hard going through, you know, when you're young, you don't even realize that,
yeah.
What you just said, which is very profound and very true. And then as you start to mature, you start to realize that is true. But then it also takes a long time to, like, well, what is my personality? What guitar? what is the sound I'm looking at? It's, you know, it's just a lifelong journey, and it takes a long, long time to start to become aware of those things and how you do that, that actually expresses itself.
Well, shall we play Gone as Yesterday?
Sure.
Is that a nylon jobber for you?
Well, let's play. Yeah, let's.
Okay.
That sounded great. Let's both play it on nylon. This is a tune. This was also off my first album, 1997, How My Heart Sings. It's still around out in the ether. I still have 400 copies of it in my garage if anybody wants to buy one. I remember where this tune came from very, very well. My ex-wife and I had a couple that were good friends back in my grad school days at Indiana, in Bloomington, Indiana. And Sherry was the wife of this couple. She died of cancer at the age of 34.
Ooh.
In 1996. Yeah, left us way, way too soon. And she was a great person. They were great folks. I haven't talked to John Huber. John, if you're out there, somewhere in the ether, hi. I haven't talked to him in a while. So I wrote this tune sort of in dedication to Sherry. Of course, you know, musicians know that it's never really quite that simple. Songs just, you know, sounds come to you, and you sit down with your instrument and you start playing around with certain sounds, and the next thing you know, you have a sequence of sounds, and the next thing you know, you have a short composition. And this just had this just really melancholy sort of thing to it. And I think it was right after we had gotten back from her memorial service. And so that was very, very heavy on my mind. And so that's where this title came from, that, you know, yeah, it's sort of a poetic way of expressing that we have today, we don't have tomorrow quite just yet, and yesterday, it's just gone. That's all there is to it, whether it's good, bad, or otherwise. That's yesterday. It's gone. So that's where this came from.
Cool. All right.
Do you want to play on this a little bit?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I'll play on a little bit. So
just watch the B major in the fifth measure.
I know.
That's the one that's always like, what?
I did actually look at this. That's right. It's like, wait a minute.
Well, that's where pentatonics come in, because...
Completely.
Yeah. Forget the sevenths and
all
that.
And is the form A...
It's A-A-B-A.
A-A-B-A?
Yeah, it's just an A-A-B-A tune.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, listeners, there you go. That's the rehearsal.
Yeah.
And now we're going to play the tune. And the song is called Gone Is Yesterday. The show that you're listening to is talking about jazz. I'm your host, Joan Griffith. My guest is guitarist, composer, all-around guy around town playing music, David Singley. And we're going to play two nylon string guitars on a song he wrote called Waltz, called Gone Is Yesterday. So, all right, David, count this sucker off.
Okay. One, two, three, one, two, three. Thank you.
Dave. That's a beautiful tune, too.
Thank you.
Gone is Yesterday. Well, if you just tuned in, that was David Singley on the guitar. And we've been playing some original music and some not original music. But just because we can, I guess, we're going to play a standard. All the Things You Are is the choice.
Absolutely.
We love that tune.
As my dear friend Bob Brookmeyer, the late Bob Brookmeyer, used to say, it's how jazz musicians say hello.
Is playing just standards.
Just play standards. Get together and play a standard. Oh, hi, how you doing?
Yeah.
Oh, get to know each other a little bit.
Right, yeah. Now, I know in Radio Land you can't see this guitar, but it is a thing of beauty. It's an archtop steel sting electric. It says Barker on the top. Tell us about this beauty.
Sure, gladly. This is a Barker. William G. Barker was a guitar maker who lived in Bartonville, Illinois, which is a little suburb of Peoria. Bill Barker was my guitar teacher from about the ages of 14 to 18, so basically throughout my high school years. He made guitars. Myself and my family could not afford them, could only dream of them, but he always had. In fact, he made a few seven strings, and he would oftentimes bring one of his seven strings to lessons, but always one of his guitars, and he would let me play it once in a while, mm-hmm. like for a tune. It was a special treat. So over the years, I've kept my eyes and ears out, and a couple of years ago, about 3 years ago, I found one online that was for sale at Grun Guitars in Nashville.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And I called them up and asked them about it, and they said, oh, yeah, it's in great condition. It was made in 1986. Consignment family in Iowa to whom it had been sort of bequeathed by its previous owner, who I think was a jazz guitar player from Chicago. And then they wanted to part with it, so they took it to Grun Guitars in Nashville to consign it and get to sell it. And they said, yeah, it's in great condition, blah, 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 blah. And I said, let me take a walk. So I took a walk and called him back. This was on a Saturday morning. And I said, can you hold it for me till next weekend? And they said, sure. So I flew down to Nashville the next Saturday. And, man, I mean, when the salesman, they set me, you know, in a room and with a little amp, and the salesman went and got it. And when he brought it out, and I just, you know, tears welled up in my eyes. I hadn't seen a Barker in a long time. And when I first started playing it, it was a really emotional experience. And, I mean, I knew I was going to buy it. There was no question about, well, gee, will I, won't I? No, I knew I was going to. So I got it home, and, yeah, it's just been, not life-changing, but it's been a really extraordinary experience owning this instrument for the last 3 years. Just a chapter of my life from my past kind of coming back to me. And it is a beautiful guitar, and it is an amazing guitar to play, and it's amazing guitar to hear just acoustically. It's loud as all get out, which is how the old style
right,
art chops are supposed to be. So it makes a great rhythm guitar. As we were talking earlier, the pickup on it is the original Daramond Super Chief, which was the creme de la creme of pickups on the old archtops, and Bill had a slew of them that he had, you know, bought and kind of just kind of squirreled away, and that's what he put on his guitars exclusively. So yeah, this is a completely handmade instrument by one man, by hand, made in 1986. Bill died, I think, in about 1992. He was a very interesting guy. He was a World War II vet. He was a POW mm-hmm. at the end of World War II, and that kind of contributed to some health problems, some lung problems he had throughout his life, which kind of exacerbated his demise, because I think he was only in his early 60s mm-hmm. When he passed away. But he was a great teacher. I really enjoyed studying with him. He was from that big band era. In fact, he claimed that his claim to fame was, and I would believe this because he was in the Army Air Corps stationed in England in 1940, whatever that year was, and mm-hmm. I'm about to say what it was that happened. Mm-hmm. He claims that he was the last guitar player to ever play with Glenn Miller.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah. There's a claim to fame, yeah.
Yeah, because Glenn Miller was over there with some of the ringers from his band, and they were playing some shows, and then they would just pick up musicians from wherever they were. And mm-hmm. Bill was over there, and like I said, he was stationed in England. So it's quite possible that he was indeed the last guitar. He played a gig with him one night, and then the next day they went up in the airplane and never came back.
Wow.
And so it's quite possible. But I tell people that because he was very much, he taught me rhythm guitar playing.
Mm-hmm.
whatever rhythm I've got in my right hand, I owe to Bill Barker, because he really drilled that into me. All of the merengues and the sambas and the,
cool.
the you know,
yeah.
all of those crazy rhythms,
stuff, yeah.
waltzes, how to play the, like, you know, the fast two beat where you play the off beats, but you use a downstroke instead of an upstroke.
Yeah,
he taught me to do that.
What a cool thing. Well, there you go. Listeners, it's a real insight into what, you know, makes musicians play. You know, there's lots of things, you know, the sound, the look, the history and everything. So,
yeah. Well, sound and feel are the things that I'm kind of coming to as I'm getting older. It's got to sound right, and it's got to feel right, and it's really hard to explain. Like, what does that mean? What's right? I don't know. But I know it when I hear it. And I know it when I feel it, and that's what I'm trying to go to with my music. The other stuff, I couldn't tell you. I really don't know. But I know when it sounds right, and I know when it feels right, and that's what I'm aiming for. On any given day, I might miss, or I might hit my aim, but that's what I'm always aiming for.
Yeah. Well, let's hear that thing. So we're going to play all the things you are. Do you play the intro or just on the head?
Oh, I don't know. What should we do?
It's up to you.
You're
the star.
No, we'll just... I'm the star.
Just right on it?
Yeah, let's just go right on.
Okay. So, listeners, we're going to go right on All the Things You Are. It's David Singley in the studio with me and Joan Griffith. I'm your host, and I'm going to play a little bass, and we'll hear this beautiful Barker guitar.
One, two. Thank you.
Yeah, now that is a lovely sounding guitar.
Isn't it? In the room, acoustically.
Wait, yeah, it sounds beautiful.
You hear the amp, you hear the strings, you hear the wood. Yeah, you hear the whole deal.
Yeah, and I always kind of hate it when people come up to you and say, gee, that's a good sounding guitar. And, you know, the guitar doesn't sound good unless somebody plays it, for Pete's sake. So not you make it sound beautiful
Yeah, it's a synergistic kind of a process between the player and the instrument.
How fun. Yeah. Well, David, thank you so much for being my guest today in the studio.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been a blast.
A lot of fun. And listeners, if you're just now tuning in, you'll have to check out the whole show. This is Talking About Jazz. I'm your host, Joan Griffith. We record in the lovely studios in the KBM radio station in North High School, and I have my excellent engineer, Wesley Phipps, on board. And thanks, everyone, for listening.